Welcome. I usually get to introduce myself because it's kind of hard to say my name, Alexis Steichberg. And then, as David mentioned, my presentation today is about predictors of functioning in women with fibromyalgia syndrome. And this project was supported in part by a grant from the National Institutes of Health, and I want to definitely acknowledge all my collaborators and co-investigators that, of course, nothing would happen without their able assistance. For those of you who aren't familiar with fibromyalgia syndrome, it is characterized by chronic widespread pain, by fatigue, and sleep difficulties. This is a very common condition compared to some of the other conditions and disabilities that we pay a great deal of attention to. It's estimated to affect 3 to 6 million Americans, with almost all of those being women, or close to 80% in most estimates. The cause is unknown. We have not really been able, there are several possible pathophysiological mechanisms that have been identified as possible villains in this process, but basically we still do not know what this is. There are no preventive measures. The medical treatment is limited. It's symptomatic. It's often ineffective, and this is a very frustrating condition. One of the key things about this condition is, if you go back to that first item, all of those characteristics are non-visible symptoms, and people with this disease, besides being women and suffering from chronic pain, really struggle with the issues of this being a legitimate condition. And as you'll see, they are very severely impacted by it. It tends to follow a chronic, non-remitting course. One of the things we kind of have to tell people early on is, so far, we really don't have any magic pill for you, any cure. You are probably going to live with this throughout your life. You can live better than you are right now, but it's never probably going to go away, and you're not going to be the same you were before. Again, the invisible symptoms, and it tends to have a substantial impact on functioning and subsequent disability. So what I'm going to do today is talk about predictors of social and role functioning among women who are living with FMS, and to do this, I'm using data from the baseline surveys of an intervention study, a randomized clinical trial of the Lifestyle Counts intervention. And since that's where this sample comes from, I wanted to tell you just very briefly what that intervention is. It's a theoretically and empirically based intervention to promote health and well-being of women with FMS. For those of you who know my work from before, this is an adaptation of our successful wellness intervention for women with MS that we developed in the early 90s. So it pulls on the constructs of health within illness, health promotion theory, and self-efficacy theory, but the whole notion is that in the context of living with a chronic or disabling condition, that people can still work about promoting their health and have some positive outcomes. Just to give you an idea, so these were all women who had volunteered to be in this study, and when there was just simply an ad in the paper about an inch big announcing the study. It wasn't even an ad, recruitment ad. We got over 400 phone calls within a space of a couple of days. Our voicemail box were overflowing. They were calling back and back again. So there are a lot of women out there who are very interested in this. And we actually never had to do much recruiting for this. People just kept finding us. We're thinking about this a little bit in the notion of the disablement process model. And if you think about it from a standpoint of pathology, we really don't know what that is in this case. But women do have substantial impairments. They have a lot of functional limitations. And then the resulting disability of doing of the difficulty doing activities in domains of life, anything from work to hobbies to health problems. I have to say that, you know, I had studied this from an intellectual perspective a fair amount, and we'd done a small pilot before we launched this larger study, but I really had no idea how significant this condition was in the lives of the women that are living with it. Neither did anyone on my research team. The extent of difficulties that these women are struggling with. As part of this baseline questionnaire battery, the one that was larger than this even, but the things that I'm going to consider today are the demographic and illness-related variables, the fibromyalgia impact questionnaire, which gets a lot at functional limitations actually due to the condition, and it's a very commonly used measure in fibromyalgia research, the health-promoting lifestyle behavior profile, which we've used a great deal. It's the frequency of self-report of engaging in health practices. The self-rated abilities for health practices is a specific self-efficacy measure. And personal resource questionnaires, a measure of social support and barriers, self-explanatory. The CESD, of course, is depressive symptoms. And then the SF-36, the MOS, a medical outcome study, scales on social, emotional, and physical role functioning that will be reporting. The participants in the study, we had 197 women. They all had physician-verified FMS, and so this is kind of important because a lot of people think they have it based on reading about it, and if they've, you know, all of these, we had permission to contact their physicians, get medical clearances and that sort of thing. They had been diagnosed for an average of almost 10 years, so they've lived with this condition a long time. You see their range in age is 24 to 74 years, with a mean of 53. Of that, 25 women, or 13%, were aged 65 and older, and I bring that up because of the issue of employment. You see that almost all of them had completed high school, and about half had completed college. We did a little bit better job than we usually do in terms of recruitment on race and ethnicity. In Austin, we have 26% Hispanic. We were able to recruit 15%, and we have 7% African Americans in the population. As far as we know, there is no difference in race or ethnicity in terms of the presentation of fibromyalgia, so we hope to have had a better sample there. The majority had been married or were married, 63% of them, but a number were presently divorced or separated or widowed. Over half were currently not employed, and when we ask about employment, we use 13 different categories to let people tell you, because, and you still don't seem to get them all, seem to miss one, but these were the most common ones. And the one that always interests me is when people check unemployed due to disability, because I'm thinking those are the people who are telling you, I would be working were it not for this condition. And so 23% of these people, in a sample that is mostly of working age, the women. So one of the first things I decided to do that was a little more interesting to me than just the stepwise multiple regression to predict them was to do some comparison of how these women compared to the population norm data on the SF-36. And for those of you who are familiar with those scores, or those instruments, know that they're fairly small number of items. The scores get transformed using very nice complicated formulas to range from 0 to 100, and high scores are always better. So I'll be comparing these scores from our sample to the general U.S. population data that they report, and that's about 2,500 people. The norms that they report for females age 45 to 54, which captures our age group, the mean, it's not the whole group, obviously. And then there are a number of different clinical conditions that they provide data on, and I just selected these three because I thought they sort of captured a number of the issues that our women would possibly be struggling with. One were the norms for the group that was diagnosed as clinically depressed. And in the data that's available, the mean age for that sample was 41.6, and three-quarters of them are female. The norms for people with back pain, sciatica, which are 64% female and a little bit older than our sample. And then the norms for people with osteoarthritis and hypertension. So as you'll see when we go through this, these groups, even though they're a little bit older, in most cases younger in one, we have some pretty significant differences. So for the social functioning scale, which is sort of getting at overall how does your health interfere with your social role functioning, our group had a mean score of 46.57, and that's lower than 85% of the general population scores. They were down at the 15th percentile. And so then if you look at the four groups that I've compared them to, there's the mean score for the women their age, for those people who were diagnosed with clinical depression, those people with back pain, and those with arthritis. And again, our group is much, much lower than all of those groups' means, and below even the 25th percentile of every group except for those people who are diagnosed with clinical depression. We see kind of a similar picture on the role functioning related to emotional health in that they are, again, lower, much lower than the mean of the general population. Their score was 56.5. 8.5, and then when you look at the clinical groups or the groups of women, the only group that their mean score is higher than are the people who have clinical depression or are diagnosed with that, all of them. This is the role functioning related to physical health, and this was pretty striking to me. 33.25 was their mean score, and that's lower than every group, once again, including the people with osteoarthritis, who had a mean age of 68 in that group. So, again, a lot going on here. When we tried to predict this quantitatively, we put a whole basket full of variables in here, the ones that I mentioned to you before, basically the sociodemographic variables of age, marital status, years of education, the length of diagnosis. The fibromyalgia impact questionnaire is sort of capturing the burden of illness, the depression measure, and then the others of social support barriers and health behaviors. And we use the same variables with logistic regression to predict employment status as employed or not employed. We were able to account for a fairly nice chunk of the variance in each of these outcome scores. 47% of the variance, and the sets of predictors look, there's a lot of commonalities across them with fibromyalgia impact, depressive symptoms, barriers, and years of education, predicting social functioning. For emotional role-related functioning, depressive symptoms, fibromyalgia impact, and age predicted 50% of the variance. For physical functioning, role functioning that was related to your physical health, fibromyalgia impact and barriers, big contributors, explaining 48% of the of the variance. When we looked at employment status, the only two things that were significant predictors were age and fibromyalgia impact. So to kind of summarize what we found from this, certainly impaired role-related functioning was a major problem for this group of women. And just looking at their scores on the SF-36 scales, they were far below the U.S. population. If we looked at them in kind of different dimensions, in physical functioning, they were lower than all the comparison groups, and actually similar to persons with rheumatoid arthritis, it's really osteoarthritis, I believe. And yet we think, you know, we don't have any trouble of imagining disability for people with osteoarthritis, but this group that's a little less obvious, no diagnosis, you know, no lab test to specifically diagnose them, it's much harder for us to perhaps think about them. With role emotional function, they were slightly higher or better scores than the persons with clinical depression, but lower than all the others. Social function, lower than all the groups, and this does not surprise us at all. Our sense from working with these women was that they were very socially isolated in their lives, that the people who did care about them and were close to them were also very frustrated with this condition, and that they were really unable to help them, and so the tendency was, I've heard enough from you, please don't talk to me about it anymore, or go talk to your doctor who also doesn't want to talk to you. So it was a very, very frustrating condition, and one of the things that, quite frankly, they ended up loving about, and of course both the attention control and the intervention group tend to get better, was the social interaction that they got from being in groups where they were with people who had similar conditions, who, and they were treated with respect and believed, basically, in what they were going through. Across the different domains, that fibromyalgia impact, which is, again, sort of what the functional limitation piece is, predicted a lot of the role-related functioning, the disability piece, as well as depressive symptoms and the barriers. So my final thoughts of this, I've talked with this recently. Those of you that know me know that I've done, spent my career working with persons with MS and also with polio survivors, who, again, are people with disabling conditions that perhaps are much more obvious to us. But 20 years ago, when I started researching persons with MS, we suffered with a lot of these same things, that there was no diagnostic criteria, that the people that I worked with would generally have a 10-year lag time between symptoms when they knew something was wrong and finally a diagnosis, and they were just so thankful they weren't crazy because everyone had told them that along the way. So my sense is, I was talking to a colleague who's been a mentor to me, she said, you know, I think this is the next big frontier sort of for women's health, is a group of women who are suffering a great deal, but partly through the internet. They are not now suffering alone. They are hearing from other people. She said practically every study they start, she happens to be in Montana, she says, I swear every third person that signs up is a woman with fibromyalgia. So I think, you know, this is a group that with that non-visible symptoms, we perhaps, they're frustrating for us to struggle with as well in terms of how to help them, but they are certainly in substantial need of intervention. So that's all. I did it. Yeah.